Welcome back to Listen to Your Heart. I'm Jerry.
And I'm Jerry's Heart.
Today's topic, Repatha, Evolokimab. Heart, why'd you pick this one?
Well, Jerry, for people who have had a heart attack, like us, diet and exercise might not be enough to lower the risk of another one.
Okay.
To help know if we're at risk, we should be getting our LDL-C, our bad cholesterol, checked, and talking to our doctor.
I'm listening.
And if it's still too high, Repatha can be added to a statin to lower our LDL-C and our heart attack risk.
Guess it's time to ask about Repatha.
Do not take Repatha if you're allergic to it. Serious allergic reactions can occur. Get medical help right away if you have trouble breathing or swallowing, swelling of the face, lips, tongue, throat, or arms. Common side effects include runny nose, sore throat, common cold symptoms, flu or flu-like symptoms, back pain, high blood sugar, and redness, pain, or bruising at the injection site.
Listen to your heart.
Ask your doctor about Repatha. Learn more at Repatha.com or call 1-844-REPATHA.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Now, coming up on the program, we'll be talking about Putin. Could his popularity be waning inside Russia among the political class or indeed among the population? We'll talk about that. Also, Harry and Meghan not interested in Jeremy Clarkson's apology. So what are the consequences for him? But next, leadership in any sector is vital, but given the nature of the work, it's especially true when it comes to the defence forces. So what happens when those in positions of leadership either retire or simply leave to do other things? Who replaces them and what does that mean for the defence forces going forward? To get some insight into this, I'm joined now by Independent Senator and former Army Captain Tom Clonan. Tom, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, how severe is the crisis? I mean, you can look at bald numbers in terms of how many people are missing from the ranks, but more importantly, you can look at key figures within the ranks and how those positions are being depleted.
Yeah, so the corporate skill sets that are most important to the Defence Forces are those at, you know, the level of sergeant, or as they say in the naval officer, naval service potential of petty officers. And at the mid-level ranks in the officer corps, like captains, commandants, which is the equivalent of a major in the British Army. So those kind of, these are the backbone of any armed forces. These are the people who direct operations on the ground, who know how to manage people in an operational environment, who know all of the, you know, the standard operating procedures, and most importantly, are able to bring other people along, identify talent, help them to get trained and promoted. And it's that very core corporate set of skills that is being depleted. And, you know, there was a very good piece in the Examiner yesterday, you know, but the headline was kind of misleading. It said that we're sleepwalking towards a crisis in the Defence Forces. We're not sleepwalking. We've been signalling this for over a decade at this point. And as we've talked about many times in this programme, there's an overarching problem for our armed forces in that, you know, we're Europe's weakest link in terms of our defence capabilities in the air, at sea, on land and in the cyber domain. And this is not the fault of personnel. This is a consequence of a lack of investment and allowing the organisation to run down.
Do you think it's been, if you like, a misunderstanding of what neutrality means? The idea that to be truly neutral, that you lay down your arms, you render yourself defenceless because no one could be hostile to us and therefore we don't need to defend ourselves.
I don't think it's that per se. I mean, I welcome the debate on neutrality. There are members of government parties who favour Ireland joining a military alliance. I don't. I think that would be a big error for Ireland. But the debate about neutrality has been reinvigorated, I suppose, in the context of the war in Ukraine. And the minister, Simon Coveney, now Micheál Martin, have announced significant investment to kind of assist. But in relation to the mistreatment of people in the Defence Forces, this is a personnel matter. I think it began with the kind of the peace dividend after the IRA ceasefires and the peace process and the Good Friday Agreement. I think the government felt that they could kind of take the foot off the accelerator, as it was, in terms of investment into the people in the organisation, so that now they're not valued by politicians. And so successive governments have allowed their wages to diminish to the point that they're the lowest paid workers in the public sector. And because of the lack of numbers, we have a perfect storm where many soldiers, most soldiers, are doing, you know, maybe one or two 24-hour duties a week, plus their ordinary scheduled working time. So they're effectively, on average, doing a 60-hour week. And that's where the problem lies. And I think...
But what are they doing, Tom? I mean, obviously, when we had the pandemic and we had the army rowing in, as they always do when we have a national emergency, whether it's snow or storms or whatever it might be, the army row in. But on a normal, non-crisis day, what are they doing? Why is an officer working 24 hours?
So, to secure the state against its internal...
No, but I mean, who's at us?
Yeah, well, there are significant challenges. I mean, so to try and answer that incrementally, we have the Army are involved in partnership with Garda Síochána as the Joint Task Force on Combating Drugs and Organised Crime. And we have a serious problem on the island with so-called organised crime gangs who have intimate links to terrorist organisations like dissident Republicans, dissident loyalists and so on. There is also the emerging threat of the far right. And in fact, I'll be attending a briefing on that, the structures of the far right in Ireland, Northern Ireland and the Republic in the coming weeks. Last year, the army carried out 128 separate aid to the civil power operations in support of An Garda Síochána. These are armed support operations in support of the guards. 450 approximately medical emergency airlifts. They were involved in building a Bailey Bridge over the River Boyne, helping to put out gorse fires last summer. Like, the army is always there working away. We're responsible to patrol, 15% of the European Union's maritime domain. The demands are significant, and to do all of that safely, there's a huge emphasis on training. Like, the Defence Forces is a kind of a capital asset of the state. Every activity that happens in the civilian sphere happens in the army: dentistry, nursing, medicine, logistics, transport, supply, technicians, aeronautics. And so the Defence Force is a learning organisation, always has been. And so there's a huge emphasis on training to meet all of these commitments.
And it means that people are exceptionally well qualified.
They are.
So they can be cherry picked by the private sector when they reach a certain stage in their career.
Yeah, and the problem is that the numbers leaving, particularly the highly skilled people, the numbers leaving is not being, you know, recruitment can't keep pace with that. So last year, I think the Defence Forces in all of 2022, they managed to recruit, I think it was 350 people, of whom I think 25 were women. But the numbers leaving are far in excess of that. And, you know, thousands have left since 2016, 2017. And basically, it's the, like, one of the things, a quick fix on this would be to just look at the pay scales and pension arrangements for Defence Forces personnel and bring them in line with the rest of the public service. Give them a living wage, a decent wage. And you know, it puzzles me because I now that I'm in Leinster House, I see people like Micheál Martin and Leo Varadkar, and every day they interact with members of the Defence Forces. They fly them from A to B in the government jet. They look after them in Oras an Uachtar Rán. They provide security. You know, I don't understand how they can look them in the eye, and not pay them a decent living wage.
What is the amount of money that would be involved on an annual basis to bring Army, Navy and Air Force payment up to the appropriate level of remuneration?
Yeah, I don't have that figure, Pat, but I know that the representative associations for both officers, that's RACO and PD4 for other ranks, have made repeated submissions. And it wouldn't, like, you know, you're talking about 9,000 personnel at the moment across all three services, give or take. It's not going to break the bank. And, you know, people...
Yeah, because if you think of over 100,000 people in the HSE, for example.
Yeah. And people don't join the Defence Forces to become wealthy. You know, there's a cohort of people in Irish society, in every society, who want to serve their country, either as guards or firefighters, paramedics. Army people, you know, young people, young men and women want to join the army and serve. And they shouldn't be exploited, but the human potential there is enormous. Like, there's great people in the organisation and they should be rewarded. They're not looking for they just don't want to be the lowest paid public servants. And, you know, as we saw with the tragic events in Lebanon before Christmas, you know, young people are prepared to pay, you know, the ultimate sacrifice for the Republic, and they should be recognised.
But is the design of any armed force is not really based on people leaving after a certain length of time? Because not everyone who starts off as a junior officer is going to become the top dog. It is a pyramid, so yes. It does get narrower at the top.
Yeah.
And the same would apply maybe to privates. They come in at a certain stage. Some of them become NCOs. Some of them may become sergeants. But at a certain stage, the people who do the frontline mullocking, you really don't want the 59-year-old doing that mullocking. You want the 29-year-old
absolutely
doing that mullocking. So attrition in any armed force?
Yes. And in professional armies, there's that concept of, you know, move up or out. You either get promoted or you move on. But in other armies throughout Europe and in the United States, they put in place provisions to allow for that. Now, since 2013, the Department of Defense and government have interfered with the pension arrangements of army officers to the extent that when they do leave as a young person, they can't claim any, you know, you're forced out in your early 50s. You must retire, but you can't claim your pension until you're 67. So that places, and you know yourself, Pat, I'm in my 50s. That's the most expensive time. You know, I've four kids. It's like throwing 50 euro notes into a furnace trying to keep up with them. So you're asking young people to remain in an organisation that will spit them out in their early 50s. And give them no pension provision. And so young people realise this after the rush of being commissioned and, you know, working in an operational unit. And they do the maths and they say, I can't stay here, and they leave. And that is leading to a kind of a cliff face of young people just leaving the organisation without the organisation being able to harness the investment and harvest that investment.
But is that not part of the either go up or go out?
No, because in other jurisdictions, they factor into the conditions. You know, people know that they're going to have to leave, but they will get a small pension, albeit, to assist them, you know, to make that transition. And they're just not doing that. They've taken the safety net out from
it wouldn't break the bank, in your view, to paying conditions.
But, and I also think, Pat, it's a huge investment in the Republic because, you know, we face considerable challenges in the next 10 to 15 years. Now, I've said this before, I don't believe Óglaigh na hÉireann or the Defence Forces will exist in 15 years' time. I don't believe an Garda Síochána will exist in 15 years' time. They will have been replaced by something else. For example, Police Service of Ireland or, I don't know, Armed Forces of Ireland. Because whether we like it or not, whether we're ready or not, we're going to have some sort of an all-island situation here in the next 20 years. And that is going to bring significant challenges. We have to have an army that's fit for purpose and that is acceptable to all communities. And we're going in the opposite direction of that because we're not preparing for it. We're not investing. And the most important asset in all of that, it's not tanks, you know, armour personnel carriers or aircraft. It's the people. Yeah. You've got to invest in the people.
Finally, Tom, on a different topic but related, the idea of sending a close protection force, special forces to Kiev to mind our ambassador and other diplomats there. There is a delay in it. I think they'll have to introduce some legislation to allow it to happen.
Yeah, so just so that the listeners understand, in Ukraine, for example, in Kiev, all of the European Union ambassadors have close protection teams. And, you know, it's an act of solidarity to keep our embassy open in Ukraine. And our ambassador, you know, she deserves the protection of the people who are best trained in Ireland to do that. And, you know, I know the principal threat is from these drone attacks, these Shahed drone attacks, which is an absolutely disgraceful, indiscriminate attack on civilian infrastructure and civilians. But if the ambassador and her staff need to get out quickly or move from one place to another, they absolutely deserve that. But everybody else has it. We don't. There seems to be an anomaly in the Defence Amendment Act in 2006. Micheál Martin has said he's going to move on that, and I would fully support that.
All right, Tom Clonan, Independent Senator. Thank you very much for joining us on the programme.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.